What was he like as a man, first of all? Because we've heard people talk about his, you know, his worth and his impact in the industry. But, you know, what was he like to be in a boardroom with?
He was an absolutely magnificent chap. And I was very privileged to be on the board of Capital Radio as a soulless business in the mid-80s and into the 90s before he stepped down as chairman and then became life president. And even to this day, with the business being owned by Global Radio, he's still very much revered by old colleagues. Working with him around the board table was an absolute pleasure. As I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know, board meetings can be fairly treacherous affairs, but there was nothing like that with Attenborough on board. I mean, he was joined around the board table by the actor Brian Forbes, who also passed on recently, his co-founder of Capital Radio, a dentist from Surrey, Barclay White, and he also persuaded Joanna Lumley to come and sit on the board. That was the type of charisma that Dickie had.
And also, I suppose, I mean, you know, obviously, and nothing wrong with this, but there's an emphasis very often, I imagine, in you know, commercial arts world of making money. But I imagine someone like Lord Attenborough came very much from a sort of, well, from an arty background. He was very much in it for the work.
He was, but, I mean, his social conscience was large and obvious to all those who met him. And, well, of course, his idea to run the charity Help London Child, which has raised millions over many, many years for so many worthy charities. I was privileged to be a trustee on that board for many years, and I can tell you, we literally gave away millions of pounds to thousands of London organisations, and he was the driving force behind that. I mean, he really was the driving force behind Capital when it came on as the first music commercial station that the BBC had ever had any challenge from, if we exclude the old pirate radio situation. And my goodness me, everybody knew that he was about the place. Everybody knew that he was on the staff. And the first few years weren't easy because back in the early 70s, there was a recession. You remember the miners' strike, all that sort of thing. And to be absolutely truthful with you, rumor has it that he had to sell one of his more famous paintings, a Renoir, I think it was, in order to keep the business going. That is how tricky a period he navigated the business through. It was not easy for many entertainment businesses at that time. He did a magnificent job, and he was prepared to put everything on the line for his business to continue.
Wow, so it's kind of almost a hidden story, that, isn't it? Because you hear a lot about David Attenborough and his involvement in the BBC, running BBC Two. Perhaps it's not so well known that Lord Attenborough was obviously quite a driving force behind commercial radio.
Oh, well, the driving force, because I think Capital, along with LBC, got the first licenses in the United Kingdom. And his charismatic approach, I think, also helped a great deal in attracting a lot of top presenters to the station. He brought in the well-known double act at the time of Ken Everett and Dave Cash. He had another well-known broadcaster, David Simons, to kick the whole thing off. He actually was the first voice heard. You may have heard the original tape where he says, "This for the very first time is Capital Radio," and the first record played was chosen by him, and that was Simon and Garfunkel's "Bridge Over Troubled Water." So this was not a passive chairmanship and latterly presidency. You know, this was somebody whose charisma hung over the building. And you know, I worked in the company with Chris Tarrant, and Chris used to laugh at the fact that Lord Attenborough would always call him Kenny. A nice sort of humorous confusion with Kenny Everett.
Yeah, well, apparently...
Well, we've lost a great man here, but he'd be the first to tell you he had a magnificent innings.
Well, yeah, indeed. And apparently, it's interesting you mentioned the confusion with Kenny because, you know, the rumour goes that the reason he called everyone darling was he couldn't actually remember everyone's name. Although I'm not surprised if you're, you know, meeting so many people at the centre of the industry like
that. It was unbelievable, actually. And, you know, the volume of people and the amount of areas that he was working in some situation every day, be it film, television, radio, politics. He was a Labour supporter, the arts in all many shapes and forms, travels, the struggles in South Africa, the Nelson Mandela, the great film Gandhi. I was one of the first people that he showed his film to, Cry Freedom. Do you remember Cry Freedom for South Africa?
Mm.
watched that in the Piccadilly Theatre, in the BAFTA Theatre there, and quite frankly, he addressed us beforehand. It was one of the most moving things I'd ever seen. I mean, Dickie, when it came to big causes, had tears in his eyes.
And yet he
related
knew how,
those tales.
He knew how to entertain people as well, didn't he, Richard? That was the
thing.
He
didn't take himself too seriously,
yeah.
You know?
But even in his films, you know, I mean, Gandhi, you know, it could be a very worthy film, couldn't it? The reason I think it won Best Picture is it goes beyond that. It is phenomenally entertaining as well. It's epic. So's Cry Freedom. And even...
Well, absolutely. And he loved those actors, whom in the later years, of course, he wound up working with or that's acting with and then producing and directing. Mm. I mean, I know that he hugely admired Ben Kingsley in the Gandhi film. And you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. I think the relationship he built up with the people around him made him extra special. I mean, we've lost a unique individual here from a very unique family, because I think I'm right in saying that there's three brothers, isn't there? And we all know about David Attenborough, of course, but I think another brother was headmaster at Charterhouse, which is not a bad achievement.
Mm, and I believe the family as well had one adopted from the Kinder Transport as well, which is another fascinating story. There's so much to them.
There are so many facets to the lives of that particular family. Yeah. But just concentrating on Dickie, and as we're chatting just now, the memories come flooding back. They're all pleasant. He was also a passionate Chelsea supporter, and we were having a board meeting outside London, and Chelsea were playing on a match that was on television. This was in the 80s. This was long before Sky TV. And he insisted, before the board dinner could start, we all had to sit and watch the Chelsea match. They couldn't get the television to work, and so he personally erected an aerial at the back of it and got the old pictures on. I mean, what a character.
So, I mean, I have to ask you, I guess, two final questions. One is, you know, with such a huge film career, you know, I've actually been looking on Twitter and people sharing an image of him in A Matter of Life and Death. I mean, he's around so long, you forget he was in a film that was that old, but he was.
Yeah.
With his film career, what's the role or the film that you think he'll be remembered for? And then in your personal experience with him as well, how will you remember him best?
Well, it has to be Gandhi, because, I mean, the phrase, "and the winner is Gandhi," from so many award ceremonies, still lingers in my mind. So, I don't think that I can possibly better that, although enjoying him in so many different roles. I mean, really, as I've said to you there, Ollie, what a man. And personal memories, I mean, there are many around the board table. But as the program director of Capital Radio in the 80s, we launched a football program called Capital Gold Sport, when we split our two frequencies in London into Capital FM, the hit music station, on 95.8, and then Gold on 1548, which also had sport. And there was a football commentator on there called Jonathan Pierce. And I had to let him and the board hear the sort of work that he had been doing in his first year on Capital Gold Sport. And I have the tears were rolling down his cheeks as Jonathan was describing some particular action. I mean, he absolutely loved it. He absolutely loved it.
Well,
without him, commercial radio probably wouldn't be in the robust health that it is today. And I think, you know, his successors certainly remember this.
Well, that's fascinating for me as a radio geek, Richard, but I'm sure interesting for lots of people who didn't realise his role in commercial radio. Richard Park, thanks so much for joining us this evening. Thank you.
Great pleasure, Ollie. Thank you very much indeed.